Hey everyone, welcome back to our short saunter through the wonderful world of ocean reproduction.
Ocean Lovin', our series on sex in the sea, has traditionally gone a little beyond schedule because we had so many amazing and interesting species to talk about.
Over the years, we've covered species like sex-changing clownfish, the bizarre Osedax worm, and even parrotfish.
Also, anglerfish, exploding larvations, immortal jellyfish, and really old mussels.
And through it all has been our continuing partner in this amazing journey, the affable Dr. Skylar Bear.
Hey guys, it has been a pleasure and a long, long journey.
So what are we talking about today, Skylar?
Today we are going to talk about the class Myxini and clade Gymnosomata, also known as hagfish and sea angels.
Hagfish and sea angels? What is this, a Dan Brown novel?
Come with us on this final episode of this season of Ocean Lovin'. Let's Marvin Gaye and get it on.
Welcome back to Ocean Science Radio.
The show that brings you the latest, greatest, and deepest stories from the ocean. I'm nerd, aquanaut, and shark scientist Francis Faribault.
And I'm ocean and climate gunslinger Andrew Kornblatt.
As usual, this episode deals with adult issues and is not appropriate for all ages. In other words,
please listen to this entire episode before sharing it with young ones.
Okay, so we're talking about sea angels?
That's Alexander Simonov. He is the head of the Scientific Endeavor team at the White Sea Biological Station.
Sea angels are super tiny, semi-transparent mollusks, the largest species getting about 5 centimeters. They have two wings, with large air quotes, which are actually their feet, and two horns, even larger air quotes, that are actually chemical sensors. While these flapping water column dwellers look like floating, ethereal ghosts, you may have seen the video floating around Twitter and social media, it's blown up a bit recently, they have the same ancestors as common gastropods. Just interjecting really quick here, this is Francis, your friendly neighborhood biology lab instructor. Take notes, this will be on the final. The basic mollusk body plan consists of 4 different things, one of which includes the shell. The others include having a mantle, a visceral mass, and a muscular foot, as well as usually having a radula, which is sort of this scraping tongue structure.
In the areas where sea angels live, food is rather scarce, so one of their main food sources, or prey, are a small planktonic group of mollusks who are closely related to sea angels called sea butterflies.
Yes, sea angels eat sea butterflies. This is getting very underwater My Little Pony. But back to mating.
As you can imagine, trying to capture mating in the wild for tiny, delicate creatures in the open ocean might be rather difficult.
In fact, There has been only one video of sea angel mating in captivity ever made, and that was in Svalbard, the same area in Norway where the famous sea vault is, in July of 2010.
So, how do these heavenly ocean creatures copulate?
A little quality time together, attached and hunting. But what happens after fertilization is rather amazing.
Another sex-changing species, and at the moment of fertilization.
Wait, so they're both male, then turn female? I'm still confused.
So am I, Andrew. So am I.
So my shark biologist brain is immediately thinking that this is kind of like claspers on a shark.
Along with being the biological station's technical divers, Alexander and his whole team have a project named Aquatilish, which leads expeditions to different areas around the world, telling the stories about ocean animals through photos and videos.
All right, so now for the super not safe for work part. You ready? We are going to take a deep dive into sea angel penises.
Well, the not safe for work, I suppose, would depend on your workplace. I regularly talk to college kids about penis fencing because I'm a biology instructor.
All right, let me give a caveat. Not safe for work for most people other than biologists, doctors, and what have you.
It's a glamorous job, folks. But first, there are a few things we really need to understand about these creatures. Back to Alexander.
Earlier scientists had wrongly identified the attaching sucker as the penis, but when better scientific tools became sensitive enough to accurately dissect sea angels,
it turned out that there were two different parts growing in the same area of the sea angel body, leaving a little bit of confusion.
That's amazing. I can't believe it's only been 8 years, and I can only imagine how Alexander feels.
Sea angels are another example of a species that we just started to learn more about, and Alexander has high hopes for more discoveries in the future.
Thanks to technology!
But Alexander is quick to set expectations and to put things in perspective.
This was something that we ran into a lot when we were researching Ocean 11. There is a lot we still don't know about species out there.
And thanks to better technology, a more robust and diverse scientific community, and citizen science, we are making huge strides.
But the amount we don't know is staggering. There are many species, like the next group that we're going to highlight, that we can only guess at.
But before we get to our next species, a really quick and shameless plug. If you're enjoying this, you might want to check out my other podcast, Madam Curiosity. It's a show where myself and a bunch of other really cool women in STEM talk about their favorite historical figures in science, who are women that you probably haven't heard of before, but definitely should have. And now, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Next up, we are talking about hagfish with Andrew Clark. Welcome to the program, Andrew.
My name is Andrew Clark, and I'm an associate professor at the College of Charleston in the Department of Biology. My research specialty is in the field of comparative biomechanics and functional morphology.
Well, I totally know what that means, but Andrew, why don't you explain it so that everyone that doesn't know what that stuff you just said means?
In English, I'm basically interested in how animals are built and how they function, in many ways like machines. So I'm kind of interested in understanding how animals like hagfishes deal with certain physical constraints that are presented by their bodies.
Andrew's work compares the way animals are built and how those designs operate and compare to other species.
What makes them similar and what makes them unique?
And hagfish, also known as slime eels, are very unique.
Well, hagfishes are a type of fish, and you know, we usually say fishes because even though in grade school we're conditioned to saying the plural for a fish is fish, but a lot of scientists who study fish usually use the word fishes because fishes are such a diverse group of organisms that even to the point where there are certain types of fish that are even more closely related to four-legged vertebrates hopping around on land in comparison to other fishes that we typically think of being fish. In the case for animals like hagfish, they're certainly a type of fish, but they have a lot of characteristics that are very much invertebrate-like, in addition to having some other features that basically allows us to call them primitive or ancestral vertebrates. These are animals that have very primitive traits. Like, for example, hagfishes, they don't possess bones, they don't possess jaws, they don't possess paired fins, they don't have scales. They're pretty minimal-looking organisms. There's not so much, at least at first sight, when you look at an animal like a hagfish. They don't have vertebrae. They don't really have a vertebral column.
Hagfish are considered to be greatly reduced, or in other words, they're not as derived as a lot of their other vertebrate cousins and have more primitive features. For instance, they lack bone and cartilage that most other vertebrates have.
I know I do.
Hagfishes are the only known group of animals that don't possess a vertebral column, but they have a skull. And most vertebrates, over 99% of them, possess jaws, but hagfishes are part of that small minority of vertebrates that lack jaws. However, they have teeth.
In fact, hagfish and lamprey collectively comprise about 0.02% of the living animals we call vertebrates.
And while they lack fully expressed, air quotes, jaws, they make do and can do some damage.
So interestingly enough, despite lacking jaws, hagfishes are able to transform their jawless system into a jawed system, one that comprises a rigid set of lower jaws, which could be the tooth plates, a rigid set of upper jaws, which could be the body that's tied into a rigid ball or knot, and the feeding apparatus, which when it's activated to control the teeth, becomes a rigid compression-resistant knot. But that's under a lot of that's under the neural control of the hagfish. And the structures that these animals use for powering their teeth can, under neural control, can be transformed from being really soft and flexible to being really turgid or rigid and undeformable. They can feed on a variety of different types of foods. They don't really go for hard shelled items, and they don't crunch on bones, but they will feed on any kind of soft tissue that they can get a hold of. So, for example, you can envision a story where there's maybe a large whale somehow died and then sunk to the bottom of the ocean. That body of whale could suddenly, in the course of maybe 1 or 2 days, could be transformed into a pile of bones. Usually what happens when a carcass like a whale falls to the bottom of the sea, there's a lot of animals of hair, including lots of hagfishes. And they'll swarm over the body of the whale carcass and continue to eat them from the outside in to the inside out. Hagfishes will sometimes enter into the bodies through like the blowhole or the mouth or the anus of the animal and eat the animal from the inside out as well.
Okay, that is terrifying. I will not get any of that out of my head for a while. These creatures are odd.
They're basically a very strange minority of fishes that are still, even to this day, poorly understood. It's very likely that these animals have a long fossil history that goes back to the Paleozoic, at least from what we see from evidence from the fossil record, but it's very likely that these animals probably came into being somewhere maybe around 500, maybe 550 million years ago.
Many fishes produce mucus for protection, feeding, or housing, but none of them produce as much as hagfish.
Hagfish are number one. Hagfish actually shoot this slime at predators and sometimes prey to clog up their gills and slowly suffocate them. Wait, this is Valentine's Day, not Halloween. Sorry.
they spread their love through slime. Humans have been using hagfish slime for a number of purposes, including making an environmentally friendly nylon-type material. And the slime has even been eyed for biomimetic projects to be used in things like Kevlar, airbags, and even replacing damaged tendons.
All right, but this is our Ocean Lovin' episode, so how do they Marvin Gaye and Get It On? That's to say, how do these slimy creatures have sex? The slime part of it, maybe?
Good question. It's a good question even to this day. It's a question that's been around for more than 100 years, but we don't have much to say about the reproduction of these animals. Over the last 10 years, there have been some pretty strong advancements in the embryology of the hagfishes, in particular one species, the Japanese inshore hagfish. There's approximately 80 species of hagfishes, and we don't really know how these animals mate. We don't really know anything about how they actually copulate in the wild, how they actually mate. What we do know from anatomy is that, hagfishes, there are males and females. They're even hermaphrodites, interestingly enough. And there are even some individuals that are sterile. In other words, they don't have gonads at all. But the hagfishes, let's see, for females, the amount of eggs that are produced is relatively small, and for males, the size of the testes is very small for hagfishes, and the amount of spermatozoa that are possessed in the testes is very low as well. And hagfishes, another thing that's important to recognize about them is that they do not possess copulatory organs. You know what I mean by that?
Oh, I know what that means. That means they don't have a penis or a vagina.
Well done, Andrew.
So that is one of the reasons why people would assume that, wives assume that these animals use external fertilization. Since they don't have copulatory organs like a penis or a vagina, they don't use internal fertilization. Sperms release into the water and the eggs are fertilized externally. This is also a similar thing that lampreys have to deal with as well, which is the other group of jawless fishes.
Slimy, jawless, wiggly broadcast spawners. I dig it.
There's been some hypotheses, perhaps, that the slime may aid in the fertilization process in terms of suspending maybe the eggs and sperm, but that's not something that's been really demonstrated empirically. And it could be argued that an environment like that could also be harmful to reproductive cells like eggs and sperm. I don't know. I don't really have any strong reason to believe that the slime necessarily aids in them doing that.
Well, Professor Clark, what have you found in your research about the proclivities of the hagfish libido?
Well, actually, the kind of research that I do at first sight doesn't even seem to be related to reproduction. I actually studied how hagfishes bite without jaws. They have teeth, and they're able to actually perform a biting-like movement. But interestingly enough, they don't possess proper jaws. So my colleagues and I study how they actually use their tooth plates for grasping and ingesting food. We also study how these animals will tie their bodies into knots and use the knots for enabling themselves to get a better purchase on food items.
Tying your body into knots, that seems like a special ability, maybe even a superpower.
A lot of recent work that has been going on in my laboratory at the College of Charleston has been looking at the material properties of the hagfish skin. The skins are particularly interesting because, in contrast to pretty much all fishes, hagfish have loose or baggy skins, which is very different compared to what we typically see with fish, which have skins that are tightly wrapped around the body like spandex. But other than hagfish, the only other animals I know that can tie their bodies into knots, I mean, this is with respect to fishes, are moray eels. And these are two groups of animals that I've recently began studying because these are the only two groups of fish that have skins that are not wrapped around the body or not intricately connected to the body as they are in other fishes.
Hagfish are not designed to be very good at swimming. Tight-fitting skin allows fish to retain that hydrodynamic shape while swimming. If they deform, then there's drag, and with all that loose skin, you get a lot of drag. For instance, have you ever been swimming with a loose bathing suit on or seen a video of somebody skydiving and watched their cheeks just like flap in the wind? A lot of drag.
But on the flip side, there are many benefits to having slack skins. There's a lot of flexibility that's permitted with a loose body covering, and when it comes to maneuvering hagfish, they're really good at that.
And Professor Clark hypothesizes that that kinky ability leads to some naughty times.
So hagfishes, they can tie themselves into a variety of different styles of knots depending on the species. They're very flexible. They can swim backwards. They can twist their bodies around. And this gives us perhaps some window if we want to think about mating or copulation. If these hagfishes are as flexible as they are, perhaps they themselves, even though they rely on external fertilization, they may have some beautiful ways of wrapping themselves around one another during mating.
I can see it now, a loving embrace of twisted hagfish, like snakes, releasing sperm and egg millimeters apart from one another, and the fertilized eggs and embryos spinning around their parents in the water. Beautiful.
But since we aren't certain how they copulate, Professor Clark has some other theories.
These animals live in the marine habitat. They're strictly saltwater animals, marine habitat. They're benthic. They live at the bottom. And some species can live as deep as 5,000 meters. It's very deep, and it's in places that are not really accessible to most people. And only recently, since we have advancements with submersible vehicles that could be even remote controlled, we may be able to have some, there's probably some more hope now to maybe find these observations. But, you know, hagfishes are also known for burrowing. It's possible that maybe all of the copulatory or mating behaviors of hagfishes occur in burrows. A hagfish burrow could consist of more than one individual.
It isn't that we don't know about their life stages. We have learned a lot from hagfish in captivity.
Hagfish eggs are things that you can find even in captivity. Say for more than 10 years now, I mean, I've had hagfishes on and off in the laboratory that have laid eggs. And even one individual, I actually saw it deposit the egg, which is pretty interesting. Hagfish eggs, once they are deposited, they look like peanuts, basically, like actual peanuts, literally in the size and shape and the color. At the ends of each of these peanut-shaped eggs are little tendrils that enable these eggs to actually stick together with one another.
Turns out that the eggs of hagfish are among the largest eggs that are produced by any marine animal. The only other larger eggs, which are the largest eggs that are known to be produced in the ocean, are by sharks. There are sharks and rays that lay egg pouches known as mermaid's purses, some of which can be over a foot long.
How hagfish actually reproduce is still a scientific mystery, despite the fact that for over 100 years, there is a reward for whoever can solve it.
For well over 100 years, I think this might have been since the 1800s or mid-1800s, that the Royal Danish Academy of Sciences introduced a valuable prize that is set out to be claimed by the first biologist to understand the reproductive habits of Myxene. And Myxene, M-Y-X-I-N-E, that's a genus of hagfish. And my knowledge is that prize has yet to be claimed. There has been some recent advances in the embryology of the hagfish, how they develop. But certainly nothing has been filmed about these animals actually mating with one another.
As Professor Clark mentioned, these species have a roughly 500 million year old history. A long time not only to exist, but to maintain a reproductive strategy. Understanding how they reproduce can shed a light on reproductive evolution for a lot of species.
Well, it's a big deal to try to understand how they actually behave in a reproductive sense. Hagfishes are these ancestral types of fish, And if we have an understanding for how an ancestral type fish, like a hagfish, how it reproduces, we can get a better understanding for how reproductive biology has evolved across vertebrates and even across chordates, the phylum Chordata as a whole. So the idea is that they're important for understanding the early evolutionary history of vertebrate animals.
So what did we learn from our Ocean Lovin' series?
Well, besides a bunch of odd and strange ways that ocean species reproduce,
we learned that there is a huge world out there under the sea, filled with species we don't know nearly enough about.
We learned that technology and increased access to that technology has increased the rate of our discoveries.
And one thing that we heard from nearly every guest was the desire for more people to get into the field, to explore, and to learn.
Skylar, it has been a pleasure to have you along on this crazy, hormone-filled journey.
It has been an exciting and stimulating and thrilling time for me as well. So glad I came back for more Ocean Lovin'.
I am positive that we are going to be collecting all sorts of crazy stories in 2020, so watch out for a new series on sex in the ocean next February. Till then, stay tuned for more stories on marine science and technology from Ocean Science Radio.
And be sure to like, review, subscribe, and share our podcast with anyone that you think would get a kick out of it. And be sure to join us next time for an all-new...
Wait. Skylar, do you want to join us on this one?
Sure.
Ocean Science Radio!
Okay, so, two hagfish are at a baseball game. One says to the other, "Could you pass me that bag of peanuts?" And then the other one says, "No way! Those aren't peanuts! Those are my kids!" Get it? Get it?
Any jokes about mermaid purses?
Not off the top of my head. I need to share a story with you.
Okay.
So, fun fact, when I was a youngin, I went to a marine biology camp regularly in the sort of summer, like middle school, high school, which was a wonderful camp and hugely educational and made like a big difference in sort of the career path that I took. I had never considered really marine biology before that, even though I loved the ocean and animals and I was a humongous dork. But the first year I was there, they did like a special like Animal Planet version of Punked called Skunked. And I was skunked on television with hagfish.
Wait, what?
Okay. So it's a bit embarrassing. And I think, basically what they're like, "Hey, so while you're waiting for your parents to come pick you up, why don't you like help us clean out this tank with the fish? Just put the one tank into the other tank." And I was like a little bit new what was going on. Cause like that wasn't the regular instructor and the, you know, sort of aquarium room looked different cause there was screens up. And then when we started trying to move the fish, or hagfish. And if you don't know, hagfish are incredible. They can produce like over a liter of slime in, I think, a minute or something. Someone check my facts there. But it's an incredible amount of slime. So as soon as we started to sort of pick them up and play with them, just slime everywhere. And it's me and this other girl. And I was maybe like 12 years old. So we're giggling. We're giggling a storm. And then the guy comes out and he's like, "Oh no, what have you done? You've hurt them because they shouldn't make the slime." And we're like, he's hamming it up. And so I don't know. We sort of stumble like, "Oh, well, how do we fix it?" And then they're like, "Aha, you've," and the camera popped up and it was big fun. But too long didn't read is I was on a kid's sanitized version of Punked that involved animals. And I was punked with a hagfish making slime.
If we can find that video, there will be links in the description.
No.